Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 18th of April, and you're listening to DW's Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You're welcome to leave your comments and reactions on the stories we are covering.
On the program today, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa reassures his country of economic recovery as independence is marked without Robert Mugabe, who was the first president of the country.
Nothing is impossible, my countrymen and women. Zimbabwe shall rise and be great again. Happy 38th birthday, Zimbabwe.
More arrests as protests between Nigerian police and Islamic movement Shiite continue in Abuja.
We can never violate the constitution of this country, but we still stand on our rights. We will still come out and we will continue coming out until they did justice in what they did. If they like, they kill us, we are ready to die for this cause.
All that and a lot more coming up after we know what's been shaping the world today.
I'm Shea Meineke with DW News. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has announced that parliamentary and presidential elections will take place in June, more than 1 year earlier than planned. Erdogan made the announcement on Wednesday, a day after meeting with the head of the far-right Nationalist Movement Party, with whom he has formed an alliance. Erdogan cited regional developments in Syria as one reason for bringing the elections forward. The new date must still be confirmed by the country's electoral commission. Also on Wednesday, Turkey's parliament officially extended the country's state of emergency for another 3 months. Opposition parties have decried the extension, arguing that it has helped President Erdogan consolidate power since it was enacted shortly after a 2016 failed coup attempt. In Germany, federal police have conducted mass raids across the country, targeting a human trafficking ring that forced women and transsexuals from Thailand into prostitution. More than 100 people were detained, with 7 remaining under arrest, including a 59-year-old Thai woman and her 62-year-old German partner, believed to be leaders of the ring. Volker Stahl, spokesman for the Dortmund Federal Police Department, said it was the largest operation of its kind.
Federal police forces have raided several houses throughout North Rhine-Westphalia and other federal states. However, the focus is on North Rhine-Westphalia. A total of 60 properties were searched. This is an investigation into suspicions of human smuggling and prostitution. In Gelsenkirchen, we have a property that was searched. The federal police has a total of 1,500 officers on duty.
Also in Germany, an anti-Semitism group has published a video showing 3 suspects physically assaulting 2 Jewish men in Berlin. One of the victims described the attack as unprovoked. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said Jews must never again feel threatened in Germany, while Justice Minister Katharina Barley described the incident as a disgrace. Police said they are investigating the attack. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Zimbabwe has marked its 38th day of independence from Great Britain, with celebrations in the capital Harare led by President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who replaced former leader Robert Mugabe in a coup last year. In his first Independence Day speech, Mnangagwa said his government would work to revive the stagnant economy.
This renewed domestic and foreign investor confidence has seen our projected economic growth increase from 3.7% last year to 4.5% in 2018.
Also in Zimbabwe, the government has sacked more than 15,000 nurses who had been striking over poor working conditions and inadequate pay. The nurses' union released a statement saying strikes would continue. And finally, more than 200 child soldiers have been released by armed groups in war-torn South Sudan and returned to their families at a so-called laying down of the gun ceremony. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shea Meineke.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you to those who are listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And we start the program right away in Zimbabwe that celebrated independence today for the first time without the country's first president, Robert Mugabe. For some, there is a ray of hope, while others don't foresee a change. The nation still faces persistent economic hardships, including cash shortages and high unemployment. But President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who led the celebrations, was optimistic that the end of the country's economic woes was around the corner. DW's Columbus Mavunga with the details.
That was the arrival of President Emmerson Mnangagwa at a stadium to celebrate Zimbabwe's 38 years of political independence from Great Britain. President Mnangagwa again pledged to hold, quote, free, fair and credible elections, calling on political leaders to embrace dialogue. He vowed to tackle the country's deep economic problems.
This renewed domestic and foreign investor confidence has seen our projected economic growth increase from 3.7% last year to 4.5% in 2018. This upward momentum is underpinned by the positive performance in agriculture, mining, tourism, and construction sectors, and is further spurred by increased revenue performance following the plugging of revenue leakages. Nothing is impossible, my countrymen and women. Zimbabwe shall rise and be great again. Happy 38th birthday, Zimbabwe. Long live our independence. Long live our freedom.
Mnangagwa did not talk about Mugabe, neither did he mention anything about the striking nurses who are demanding an improvement of their working conditions. Nelson Chamisa, the leader of the country's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, attended the event to mark Zimbabwe's 38 years of independence.
We are coming here to simply give our honor to those who have departed and also to say, going forward, next time it's Mnangagwa who is going to be in the opposition, and I want him to come to this function. So I'm just coming here for rehearsals because we are going to constitute the next government.
Well, the speech was not for us an indication of what we are, the direction we are taking. He said that there are free and fair elections conditions. We actually differ respectfully. We feel that the conditions are not there, and we are going to engage him on that.
Chamisa and Mnangagwa are the main candidates in presidential elections due in July or August of this year. For the first time, Zimbabwe celebrated independence without Robert Mugabe.
Columbus Mavunga with that report in Harare.
Some of you have been commenting on this topic. Clinton Bameda from Bameda, Cameroon, says, "I believe the president because he still comes... I don't believe the president because he still comes from the camp of Mugabe. In Africa, never trust a new president who comes from the same camp as the old one."
And rather a different opinion coming in from Uganda's Charles Ongole, who says, "I have very little reason not to believe Mnangagwa because they've lived under tyranny, and now I can only give him a little bit of chance, hope, and pray that the new leadership cedes presidency to civilian competition at one point in time." That is from Charles Ongole in Uganda. And Simran says, "Congratulations to Zimbabwe."
Yeah, congratulations are in order also from us. And now we will proceed on. And here in Germany, where more than 100 people have been detained in raids against an organized crime gang involved in human trafficking and forced prostitution. Thousands of officers raided at least 62 properties, including brothels, offices and homes. The operation centers on a sex human trafficking ring accused of bringing women and transsexuals from Thailand in Germany. Most of the Thais entered Germany on tourist visas before being sent on to other towns to work as prostitutes. But what does Frank Heinrich, the director at Together Against Human Trafficking, make of all these arrests?
It's a good sign and not a good sign. Structures are so deep involved in this business. Some say there are 400,000 people working in this business, up to this, half-time, full-time. And many of them, police says, after their structures and help organizations say, 80 to 90% don't do that for free, just liberally, by their free will. So we need to go deeper in that. And if there is a number of 1.2 million transactions in the sex business in Germany per day, you can imagine how much involvement of mafia structures there might be.
So why have these structures been able to flourish, and what can the government be doing to better protect the victims?
Now, we knew that. We advocated for that. And the government, the parliament, has changed laws in the last 2 years, and one is going into function the beginning of this year. And this raid of tonight could be an outcome that the police is more open and more clear in their duties, what they need to be doing. So, you know, up to last year, it was as easy to have a brothel as organizing a Tupperware party. And now we are, and the politics have to go even more into that direction. We need to clear more what is allowed, what is not. Where is it liberal and where is it harming human rights?
That is Frank Heydrich, director at Together Against Human Trafficking, talking to my colleague Sumi Somaskanda. And now we head back to Africa, and this time Nigeria. The capital Abuja was once again a running battle as police and members of Islamic Movement of Nigeria, otherwise known as Shiite, clashed for the fourth day running as protesters demanding release of their leader Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki took to the streets. Zakzaki has been in custody since 2015 when troops clashed with his followers in the northern city of Zaria in December. Zakzaki has been at loggerheads with authorities for years because of his call for an Islamic revolution. Waisu Abubakar Idris reports from Abuja.
Protesters marched to the office of the National Human Rights Commission to register their complaint. They want the government to respect court orders and release their leader, Zakzaki. Abdurrahman Abubakar Yola is the chairman of the Free Zakzaki campaign.
It is surprising to us because this is our fundamental right to have peaceful assembly and associate with other people. There is nobody being killed by the members of the Islamic movement. There is no property destroyed by members of the Islamic movement for this period of 40 years. It is we that have been killed. Why we intensify? Because of the deteriorating health condition of the Sheikh. He's not been given adequate medical attention. What we want is for the government to follow court order.
Police had to fire tear gas and disperse the crowd. Others were arrested for violating the constitution. But some protesters, like Abdullahi Musa, have vowed to continue with the demos.
We can never violate the constitution of this country, but we still stand on our rights. We will still come out and we continue coming out until they did justice in what they did. If they like, they kill us, we are ready to die for this cause.
The police say they have already issued a statement on the matter, saying the protesters have exceeded their limit of right for peaceful protest. For now, it is clear that Abuja may continue to witness this chaos, disrupting daily activities in the city.
Waisu Idris reporting from Abuja.
And now I will take you to another story that we've been covering, and that's the British Prime Minister Theresa May has apologized to Commonwealth leaders over what she called the colonial laws that prohibited homosexuality in her former colonies. And she said that the anti-gay laws once imposed on the countries were wrong and they should no longer be used. And this is something that you've certainly been talking about.
Yeah, you're right, Jane. Chinikwe Makasi says, I have been expecting them to apologize for forcing tribes and religions that are not compatible in one country. I expect them to apologize for using divide and rule in countries that they colonized.
And Okwena Aniebo says she should also apologize to the many nations that were forcefully merged together in Africa for Britain's wicked secret gains. Those are opinions coming in from our listeners.
Yeah, and of course, one quick one from William Minter, who says, it's like saying I was not eating snakes. It was unlawful and distasteful, but now I find it good to eat.
Keep those comments coming. We shall certainly read them as and when we have time. And we do thank you to all of you who are listening to us on Facebook. This is DW's Africa Link, a program that keeps you abreast with all that is happening around Africa and beyond. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Let me take this opportunity to welcome our listeners. Mohamed Kalax, listening from Somalia. Sayo Kelia says he's listening from Florida. And Kiswiz Jalo, also listening from Gambia. So we have lots of listeners here. And coming up, Zambian government defense plans to criminalize abuse of social media.
These four bills are going to totally speak into this environment, this internet environment, so that there is data protection, cybersecurity, there is a cyber crime bill that's going to mete out the punishments for the abusers.
We will also hear about how oil spills have subjected over 600,000 people to consume contaminated water in South Sudan. But first, Uganda shall no longer be a dumping ground for obsolete cars that do not only degrade the environment, but also weaken the country's economy. Those were the words of the country's Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation, Eliadio Tumwesige, as the country amended its Traffic and Road Safety Act. The act seeks, among other things, to outlaw importation of old cars. This comes at a time when government has approved close to $300 million to boost production of electric cars at its Kira Motor Company. Frank Eager brings us that report.
The newly amended act only accepts cars not older than 8 years, but this also implies that cars will be more expensive for average Ugandans like Deborah Natukunda, whom I met at the busy downtown of Kampala City.
At least 15 years, but 10 years, really? 10 years, I'm seeing it impossible. They're actually making us not to drive, because that's what we can afford. That means some of us might even ever die without driving any car.
National Environment Management Authority says that measure is long overdue, as Tonya Chidria explains.
It is not just pollution that concerns us as NEMA, but smoke from old cars increases the risk of road accidents, as drivers have been known to decide to overtake at dangerous spots. This is in order to avoid inhaling the irritating fumes, or because of poor visibility that is caused by the soot or smoke that is emitted by these older cars.
According to the Commissioner Inspectorate of Vehicles, Franklin Kugonza, it is not just about pollution, but also road safety.
These are vehicles that have been rendered obsolete, the other side. So when they are coming here, when they are already too tired to do anything, and when it breaks down, getting it off the road is a problem.
I meet Ahmed Mudassin, a Pakistani importer of second-hand vehicles from Japan. He tells me it won't be business as usual because his customers cannot afford new cars.
Car cost will be go high. People will not buy. 2001, 2002, very hard to buy people because of taxes. It is 73% plus the other taxes. That new motor cars are low. They cannot manage in Uganda's roads, cannot manage those cars.
Considering that Uganda wants to roll out massive production of solar and electric cars, the ban might just work positively for Kira Motor Company. The company aims to produce 5,000 cars annually. Here is Paul Musasizi, its chief executive officer.
Decision by the government of the Republic of Uganda to fully fund a project for setting up the Kira vehicle plant is a testament of the commitment of the people of Uganda to developing their nation, not only to get access to new vehicles made in Uganda, but also to create possibilities for wealth and job creation.
And for Ivan Sentongo, a car mechanic, new cars is the way to go.
Someone buys a new car, a new version of a car, he brings it in the workshop, diagnosizes it with a tool, and it will be worth the asking labor, because the car will pass through the actual procedures, finding it with this solution and problem. You quote your invoice and you find it paying.
Frank Higer sent that report from Kampala.
And of course, Jane, our Facebook users have had a lot to say about this topic. But first, let's hear this clip from one of our social media users.
This is Isaac Godwin from Lagos, Nigeria.
I would say this move, it's somehow favorable to the economy of Uganda, and it is favorable in terms that the country wouldn't be more like a dump site for car that has been excessively used for a longer period of time. The government of Uganda really need to look more into it and think of a way of making these unuseful products more useful for the population. That's my opinion.
The government of Uganda should think of a more useful way to make those unuseful products useful to the population. That's a comment from our listener who didn't indicate his name. But that's not all. We also have one coming in from Onsera Colorians here. He says, all that African cities need is to create fast transport means for the citizens to move in and out of the city. No one would be interested in spending hours in traffic jam when a fast electric train can take them around the city within minutes.
Kimi Bertrand from Cameroon says it's a great move, one of its kind in Africa. I honestly hope that other African countries learn from Uganda.
And Joe also says, right move. Africans should promote African initiatives. The West should manage their junk.
Yeah,
interesting comments there. But that's all we had for Uganda for now.
On the spot.
The Zambian government plans to introduce laws that will criminalize abuse of social media and regulate its use, a move which human rights activists insist is a clampdown on freedom of expression and speech. Just recently, three people were sentenced to a jail term of up to 3 years each for defaming the president and obtaining money by false pretense from unsuspecting citizens online. Our Zambian correspondent Kathy Sikombe filed this report.
I am in one of the busy internet cafes in the capital, Lusaka, where hundreds are surfing the internet. But behind it are fears about the planned law to curb the use of social media. The government says it would stop ongoing abuse of the internet through cyberbullying, posting of fake news, creation of fake accounts, and fraud. However, some information technology experts like Nefas Tembo say it's important to educate people on the use of social media to eradicate such cases.
I think Zambia needs to understand what social media is for and what it's not supposed to be used for. We lack in that understanding, and hence everything is chaotic. Everyone is doing what they think is right. They can post a picture they think is right. They can share images, videos, audio. A whole total mess of it. I think Zambians, we need first to get back to class. What is social media? What are we supposed to use it for? What are we not supposed to use it for?
Imelda Msonda, an editor at state-owned Zambia Daily Mail, says the proposed law would deny many citizens a chance to engage in productive dialogue.
I'm looking for a platform where people engage, you know, on development issues, on any other discourse, you know, in a more civilized manner. But most of the times you find that people are too emotional. Most of the times people are, you know, engaging in a vulgar language, which for me, I believe is not very helpful.
Defending the bill, Minister of Transport and Communication, Brian Mushimba, says the government is concerned about the rampant abuse of social media networks, which some individuals have turned into platforms for insults and malicious statements against defenseless people.
So these four bills are going to totally speak into this environment, this internet environment, so that there is data protection, cybersecurity. There's a cyber crime bill that's going to mete out the punishments for the abusers.
It is also an announcement which has drawn mixed reaction from stakeholders accusing the government of trying to stifle freedom of expression. Vince Chipatuka, a human rights activist, argues that the proposed law is an infringement of human rights which should not be used to silence divergent views.
People should be allowed to express their views in as far as questioning government, where they think government is not performing well, and ensuring that their views are heard. Social media or free media should be such a way that people should be free to express their views.
That was Vincent Chipatuka, a Zambian human rights activist, wrapping up that report by Kathy Sikombe.
And as usual, our followers have not been listening or just keeping quiet. They've also been contributing. Cyprian from Cameroon says they are really trampling on our rights. What are they afraid of if they are confident in the manner they lead their people? I see them as rulers and not as leaders.
David from Southeast Nigeria says, of course, those African governments who are busy making law on how citizens should use social media are doing so because they're evil plans in government and they don't want anyone to talk about their evil and criminal activities.
We shall come back to that story a little later.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, Africa's youngest nation, South Sudan, seems to be locked in a series of problems one after another. Civil conflict has rocked the country since 2013, displacing thousands of its nationals. As if that's not enough, a new report by Sign of Hope now says that over 600,000 people are threatened by the oil spill caused by the Malaysian oil company Petronas, which is also the main sponsor of German's Mercedes Formula One team. South Sudan environmentalists say the oil spill does not only have grave effects on the environment, but has also subjected people to drinking contaminated water. DW's Daniel Pels has been following up the story, and I asked him what the report tells us about South Sudan. Take a listen.
It tells us that there is a huge problem in the country's oil-producing regions. I mean, Sign of Hope has said a couple of times in recent years that oil production is having a serious impact on the health of the people that live in or around oil fields because chemicals that are being used for oil production have leaked into water sources. But what is new now is that, provided that this research is accurate, that much more people are affected than previously thought. Here is Klaus Stieglitz, the deputy chairman of Sign of Hope.
600,000 people is a new figure. We were previously thinking that the figure was much lower.
What we also know is that South Sudanese environmentalists actually did hold a meeting with Petronas and Daimler in Zurich. Do we know what came out of this meeting?
We only know what the Sign of Hope representatives told us about what came out of this meeting. They told the journalists at the press briefing here in Berlin today that they were rather disenchanted, as they put it, with the statements that were made by Petronas representatives. Here is Klaus Stieglitz with some of the short-term solutions.
We have calculated that it would cost around 250 euro to supply one person in one of the contaminated areas with clean drinking water for 10 years. So the oil companies would have to pay some 150 million euros to tackle the most urgent issue, to supply to entire affected population with clean drinking water.
Der Bevölkerung mit sauberem und nicht vergiftetem Trinkwasser.
According to Klaus Stieglitz, that the Petronas representatives only agreed at the meeting that they would study a part of all the recommendations that were made by Sign of Hope, and that they would first have to go back to their headquarters, discuss it with the people there, and then look into realizing a part of the recommendations, but that they refused to give a guarantee that they would put all the recommendations made by Sign of Hope into action.
Now, given all that we are hearing now from Sign of Hope, from the persons who are accused of carrying out these activities, where is the position of the government of Sudan?
The government of South Sudan long refused to admit that there were any problems with oil production in the country. We have to keep in mind that oil is an important economic lifeline for the government. In December, then, a government official did admit at a UN meeting that there were problems with oil productions, that there were negative impacts on the environment, and asked for international help so that it could be cleaned up. But then in January, again, the government announced that it wanted to more than double oil production.
DW's Daniel Peltz in Berlin.
And of course, Jane, going now to our story on Zambia plans to introduce laws that will criminalize abuse of social media. Douglas from Ghana says, I think it is a step in the right direction. People hide under guise of social media to commit all sorts of vices.
From Gambia, Jalo Ibrahim says, as I said earlier on yesterday's Facebook post, Africa continent is where leaders convince people on freedom of speech when they are actually not doing the same thing. And Emmanuel Hitlisha says, I think it's okay for anyone who will use social media for abusive purposes. Thank you for listening to AfricaLink. My name is Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.